Session number 6487, reel 2.
I've seen the little pups.
Mr. Woolley, reel 2.
The kill inspection. The boots had been... the soles were in between the front parts of the boot and the heel. They had to be polished by boot polish underneath here.
The soles of the boots, yeah.
Yeah, underneath the boots. Had to be polished. that gap underneath.
What did you think of that? Do you think that was important?
No, I did not. I think it was rather stupid. But after all said and done, you're treading on blacking. I don't know anyone would tell anybody about all this truck. The thing is, it perhaps might be not right to them, but it is right. That's the truth. Yeah.
And how about your uniform inspection?
Oh, well, it's considered pantaloons and putties.
Did you have trouble with the putties?
No, they've got to be a certain height from the kneecap. Inch and a half, I think. Not the top or the centre. Something
an
like
inch and
that.
A half below?
Yeah, or something like that there, yeah. But it's to come around with a tape measure and measure the officers. This CO, he wasn't there very long. He used to come round there with a rule and measure the officers' collars. They could be half inch from the top. They had to be quarter of an inch, instead of half inch, or something like that, at the back of the neck. He used to go around the back of the head, about half a dozen officers here in a row. He used to go around there and measure the collars at the back. The collar hadn't got to be, had to be a certain height from the coat.
Yes. Do you remember the name of that CO?
No, I don't want to know his name. I didn't want to see him anymore. I forgot his name quickly.
What happened to you if your putties weren't right or if the soles of your boots
weren't
right? Well,
you go on a charge.
Then what happened?
Well, you go on, perhaps I might drop it and perhaps I might not.
Then what was the punishment?
Oh, it would be about 3 days CB, something like that. Yeah. But I had 2 good conduct badges. I didn't want to lose them.
Did you get more pay for the good conduct
badges? Yes, it's not much, a few pence more, that's all.
Can you remember how much you were earning in those days?
Yeah, £2 a week.
That was quite good.
Quite good then. £2 was a lot of money. Yes, it's quite good. It got me along all right, even £2 a week. My mother got 10 shillings a week. Allowance, she's a widow.
Now, at Duxford, you were on transport,
yeah.
Weren't you?
Yeah.
Can you tell me about your daily duties?
Yeah, very. One day I'd be on petrol tanker.
Doing next, what?
Then another day I'd be on transport, bringing, conveying children to school or going down the station and pick somebody up, someone out there, you see.
What children?
The children belong to the married quarters. It might be at anything. It might be on a special convoy somewhere. I've been in charge of a convoy about 3 or 4 lorries to transport to somewhere, another aerodrome, for movement from one place to another. But Duxford was a pool. A pool of transport. There were Duxford, a hangar full of vehicles. So relied on us for the movements from one personnel at that headroom's to another headroom. When the exercises commenced.
What sort of exercises?
War exercises.
You mean flying exercises?
Well, yeah. There were one squadron used to, say, visit another squadron and combat exercises for training for war.
You said you were on petrol tanker duties.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Is that petrol for the aircraft?
For the aircraft, yeah. The petrol for the aircraft. Yeah.
Where did the petrol come from?
I don't know. I don't know. It was 100 octane. Yeah.
So what was your job if you were on petrol duties?
Well, just filling up the aircraft. Refueling the aircraft. And I might be on something else the next day, you see. Varied. The duties varied all around. Bringing someone to the station and taking them back to the station.
Which station?
Whittlesford. I remember once when war was declared that two men reported down to transport for posting. So I says, jump in, open the back tailboard, and I jumped in then. They were still there for 3 days. They cast the 11 o'clock train from Willows or somewhere. They caught the 11 on Monday. Well, they caught it on Wednesday. The air raid warning went, so I take them round to the dispersal point instead. Brought them back in the transport. They go for the dinner. They come back in the afternoon, still waiting to go to the station. And the air raid warning used to go again round the dispersal point. They took them round the dispersal point again. They took them 3 days for a movement from Duxford because of siren, air raid warning. They departed on Wednesday instead of Monday.
Can you tell me about the equipment you had in the motor transport section?
The equipment? What sort?
Lorries, petrol houses. Was it modern equipment or was it old equipment?
The transport, you mean? We had Leyland lorries, they're very good, they were Leylands, Singer vans, Trojans, motorcycles, a lot. Yes, there's about. There were Morris, six wheeler Morrises. They were pretty good little buses, they were very good. The Leyland lorries, solid tyres, acetylene lamps. I was taking a convoy once, I was in charge of the LAC, senior LAC, I was taking a convoy of four lorries, moving flight gear from one station to another. Passing through passing through Guildford at the time, and I went to the lorry, brought a shop blind window down. The other one hit a Rolls Royce. All kind of various excitement.
Did you have enough equipment? Did you have the lorries that you needed?
The lorries, what?
Yeah. At Duxford?
Yeah.
You said that due to economy, there were cuts and things, and I wondered if you had enough lorries.
Oh, yes, there was a big reserve, a huge reserve, yeah. I got more interest in as time went on transport. As transport, I think, service vital for everybody, transport is. And that's how I got more interested. I saw, as regards of the aero engine, I tried to forget all about it. I wanted to forget because there was no future at all. No future at all. I'd been an aero engine fitter. No future whatsoever. Nothing. Dead end. And when you finished, where were you to go to for an aircraft job? Nowhere at all. When you finished the RAF. Nowhere. So as time went on, I was more interested in transport than aeroplanes. The interest existed no longer in aeroplanes.
Did you ever have an opportunity at Duxford to go up in a plane?
Oh, yes, any time you want to go. You go up if you know a flip now and again. If you wanted one, you can always have one if you wanted one. But the interest terminated. I wasn't interested no more because of the previous service, how they went about in it, to my view, was a very disappointing way. Very disappointing. As I say again, there's only one thing it taught me, to keep fit, and that's all. That's the vital thing, to keep fit. And I own the RAF a lot for that, and that's all, to keep fit.
While you were at Duxford, did you have anything to do with the Cambridge University Air Squadron?
Yes, I did. I was attached to them. Yeah. CUAS, they call them. That's right. Yes. I always went with them. Wherever they went, I went with them. For the Huck starter, the aeroplane starter. They call it Huck starter.
Did you operate the Huck starter?
Yeah. Every year I went with them. Every time I selected a goal, I got more flips down there at any time. But a Welsh flight lieutenant, Williams, he was in charge, I remember well. I liked him. He spoke to me as if, it's so easy going. He's in charge of the squadron. He used to take me up nearly every morning for a 5 minute test, you know. I used to get all the controls in him. I got on very well with him. I remember well one morning, we were not so far away from a bomber squadron, and I kept him awake that night. He says, I'll get me own back on these bees. I come on up, and he says, so he nosedived towards the hangars, but half a dozen times I wake them up, because I woke him up the night before. Flatterton Williams, his name was. CUAS, that's right.
Yes. You just mentioned the Huck starter.
Yeah.
Of course, that was different from your days in the RFC. You would have been hand-starting the engines, wouldn't you?
No, hand-starting, yeah.
Yes.
Hand-starting.
Yes.
String the prop string in.
Right. Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about the Huck starter? Because, of course, those aren't used anymore.
Huck starter?
Yes.
How it operated. It's a very clever bit of work. From the gearbox, they had an extra gear, and onto something and another attachment about 4 feet up, another gear on there, the chain driven, and operated by a spring. Dog business. And you pull a lever in, push the dogs in, then the prop, the shaft from there further on revolved.
Onto
the prop. There was a kind of a fixture on the end of this shaft to fit in the prop. When the prop started, it slung out this fixture by spring-loaded action. Prop started quicker than the movement of the prop on the huck starter. The prop of the aircraft was quicker, so it's by a spring, it slung the fitting out. So that fitted in the prop.
How long did it take to start up one of the planes?
Not long, about 2 minutes. 2 or 3 minutes is all. There's a lot of vibration, no? On the huck starter. I went to Hendon Air Display. I selected to go there. The huck starter got me 4 blankets and a pillow, and 9 rations, and knife, fork, spoon, and a mug, a plate. I slept in the tent. The Hendon Air Display. I went to each year to Hendon. I was there when that Lord Mayor's son got killed before the war.
What happened?
It's one of the most peculiar crashes out. The Cambridge University Air Squadron were there as well. And I don't know where he was, the Cambridge University Air Squadron pilot got killed. I couldn't tell you. I forget. But I knew that as we were there, and I was watching an aircraft which fell out of formation and ambled down to the ground very, very slowly, very slowly. I was watching it, landed, and I think its speed would be about 50 miles an hour and no more, coming towards the railings. And he turned sharply to the left of the railings, continued up for about 20 yards, or 20 or 30 yards, and at a speed of 10 miles an hour, and stopped suddenly. All of a sudden, the left wing collapsed to the ground, and his foot was jammed in the rudder bar. He couldn't get out. He got burnt alive.
It all what kind of plane was it?
I think it was a. What did they have? I forget now.
Were they flying gauntlets?
Gauntlet? No, it wasn't a gauntlet. No. It wasn't a gauntlet at all. There was something before the gauntlets. That I can't recall what planes they had.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. It was before the gauntlet. I know that much. Yeah.
This crash was at Hendon, was it?
At Hendon. Hendon, there's a spray. That was the one and only crash that happened. The Lord Mayor's son.
Were there crashes at Duxford while you were there?
Crashes? No, not many. No, very few. As I say, there's no flying to crash. Very, very few fly. Very few. It's a lot of planes up half the time. Very, very few hours of flying. Very, very few. And until building up for war in 1936, they started flying their machines more. Then the Spitfires appeared at that time, about 12 months before the war. So there's plenty of flying about at that time. And that's all.
As a driver, you told me you drove the lorries, you drove the petrol bowsers. Did you drive an ambulance or a fire engine?
No, that's a standby. They had their own drivers, on the fire engines. They had their own drivers, yeah. This is a normal duty, everyday duty. Attached the same transfer as us, but they had their own drivers, day duty drivers.
It In 1933, I believe it was, Douglas Bader came to the motor transport section at Duxford.
Bader? Or Bader? Yeah, I got on well with him. In charge of the empty pool, I told you before.
Yes.
What
do you remember about him?
He seemed to be kind of a decent man, very nice to us, very well. Got on very well with him. I don't think he had a very good name, but about something that occurred, and isolated cases. I don't think I think he told me, didn't you, or something about him. Did he tell me last time about Bader? About getting on with people.
Some people found him rather difficult.
He was very difficult to get on with, you mean?
People thought so.
Yeah. I believe it was... that's right, I remember that. He's very difficult to get on with. No, I found him all right. I found one of the best. It's how people didn't understand him. That's the trouble. That's life, isn't it?
Can you remember any incidents about him?
No, nothing at all. But he's
You said he was considerate. I wondered in what way you meant.
No, nothing at all. Nothing outstanding. No, just normal. So we got on well with him. Just normal duties. On the empty pool. Yeah.
I suppose at that time you knew about his history.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how long he was there for. It'd be about 12 months, I think. 9 months, that's all. Something like that, yeah.
Well, he wanted to fly, of course. He wanted to fly. He didn't want to be in the MT section.
No, I don't think he liked to be in the MT section. He wanted to fly. See, that was his interest. I think he would be very disappointed at that crash he had, you see. Very disappointed. But war come along and he was accepted again with his wooden legs. So it couldn't be very difficult to fly a Spitfire, could it? Could it now? Nothing.
Did he ever fly while he was in the MT section?
Did he? No. He was grounded, did he? Yeah.
In addition to driving, were you doing vehicle maintenance as well?
Yes. Yes, we had to help to do the maintenance as well. Yeah.
Who did that usually?
Hmm?
You said you were helping. Who usually did the maintenance?
On the maintenance? Well, they had their own fitters, you see. They had their own fitters. And perhaps he was a help out, how much we could do, that's all. I was very disappointed in everything but the RAF did. Very disappointed. The better way, the procedure in everything they did, is I think it was just absolutely terrible. That's what I think about it. No, I think I'm right in what I say. Very disappointed in everything. They could have opened out an educational class at night time instead of polishing and blanking useless equipment that they, which meant absolutely a waste of time. Waste of time in everything they did. In the organization, instead of opening out schools at night time, where you go to school and learn carpentry or something like that, if it's more useful, or painting or maintenance, that would be more useful, wouldn't it? There's nothing like that at all. It's just sitting down polishing buttons and the brass on the equipment and polishing the boots for inspection. But that's what lots of the people didn't want to if they were had a chance, they told me if they had a chance of re-engaging, they wouldn't do it. They got disappointed. And that includes the Cromwell boys too. Everything.
Are there other examples of RAF life or work that you weren't pleased with?
Yeah, do it. What's that? I got this. I'm adjusting here. I lost you. That's better. Like a year now.
You said you were disappointed with everything, and you told me about all this inspection and cleaning.
Yeah.
What about your work with the RAF when you were working?
Working?
Well, your normal duties. Were you satisfied with that, or is that another area in which you were disappointed?
I signed a contract for 8 years. I had to get on with it. I couldn't buy yourself out. You could. Where was the money to come from to buy yourself out?
How much did it cost?
I don't know. A lot. In them days. Now, what are you going to do then? Go on the dole, perhaps. And that's about all. Very, 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 very sad. Everything. Because it was very sad, the unemployment. I mean, I'm lucky to get in. Lucky to get in and to do something. And that was better than doing nothing. I was glad to accept anything going. And what about the people on the dole at that time, from 1928 to 1940?
Very difficult.
Difficult. And what about them? They were in a sadder and worse state than I was in. There was no vacancies for hardly anything in the RAF. You accept what was given to you. Sorry, no vacancies for another trade. Accept this or nothing. So I had to accept it. And that's all. I know I could do things much better than beyond transport. Much, much better. Been engineering works. Sometimes I think I should have stopped at Leeds. I was doing something, a skilled job, not an unskilled job. Well, I don't know about driving vehicles, but it's skilled or not.